the Truly Amazing Women Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. In each episode of the show, we shine a spotlight on the women who are making strides and changing lives. Hello, and welcome to the Truly Amazing Women Radio Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. On today's show, we are thrilled to be talking to award-winning playwright, screenwriter, and avid horsewoman, Dara Cloud. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. But before we launch into our Q&A, let me introduce our listeners to you. Born in Northern Illinois, Dara has a dual Master of Fine Arts in English and Theater from the University of Iowa Writers Workshop. She debuted her work on the American stage in 1982 with The House Across the Street. Her second show was The Mud Angel, and then came The Stick Wife, which really launched her career and secured her place among feminist playwrights of note in the United States. Much of her work for the stage and screen focuses on the social concerns of women's lives, which is why, one of the reasons, why we made her our Truly Amazing Woman of the Month in the March 2014 issue of our magazine, Be Incandescent. Her early plays of the 1980s and 90s depict women's struggles to gain autonomy within a culture of socially prescribed and oppressive roles, as well as their efforts to find and employ authentic voices to break the silence of sexual repression. Her later works in the 90s and early 21st century included her adaptation of Willa Cather's 1913 novel, O Pioneers, depicting strong, intelligent, self-emancipated women who defy traditional stereotypes and succeed on their own merits and efforts. Other plays raise awareness of ongoing social and racial injustice in the United States, including Honor Song for Crazy Horse, which is about surviving sexual abuse and other physical abuse, as depicted in The Sirens. This decade, she's created even more works of note, including the show that just debuted and then ended its run at the DC JCC Theater J in Washington, D.C., called Our Suburb. So welcome to the show again, Dara, and let's get down to this Q&A nitty-gritty. So let's talk first about Our Suburb. It's a homage to the classical American play Our Town by Thornton Wilder. Tell us what inspired you to write it.
Well, I grew up in Skokie, Illinois, and I got out of there as fast as I could, thinking that it was the most boring place in the universe. And when I eventually went back and also looked back on the time, I began to realize that actually behind those ostensibly boring doors were taking place some incredible conversations and events, really, especially in the 70s when a group of Nazis from the south side of Chicago tried to march through Skokie. So I kind of wanted to pay homage to our neighbors and to the struggles going on behind those doors. And I had seen Our Town again for the umpteenth time and just thought, oh, here's a wacky idea, Our Suburb. So what does the suburb mean? What did it mean then? How is that different now? And I just, that just took off. I just started to write, and all these people came back to me.
It's fascinating how the process works, and we'll get a little bit more into that deeper down. But first, I want to talk a little bit more about this play. It's directed by Judith Ivey, a four-time Tony Award nominee, who most recently in 2013 for The Heiress, and a two-time winner for her performances in Steaming and Hurly Burly. So how did you meet her and decide to collaborate on this show?
Well, Ari Roth, who is the artistic director at Theater J, put us together. He just thought we would get along. And Judy had done a show about Ann Landers for Theater J, for a gala for them, for a fundraiser. And they kind of mutually fell in love with each other. And Ari just wanted to do Our Suburb and said to me one day, well, what about Judith Ivey? She's directing now. And I said, well, you know, we should meet. The funny part about it is the two of us look somewhat alike. We're the same height. We have the same haircut. We have Midwestern accents and I guess something of the same mannerisms. So people were constantly mistaking us for each other, which is really funny because Judy was saying, well, I guess that's how much they recognize me. But it was pretty great. And we kind of finished each other's sentences. So it's been a really great collaboration.
Yeah, you were even dressed alike at the debut, which was sponsored by David Bruce Smith. And you guys were so adorable. That was very fun. So, but you've created a lot of popular plays, including What's Bugging Greg, which is a winner of the Macy's New Play Prize and was produced by the Cincinnati Playhouse in 2012. And then on tour there now, you told me, is Joan the Girl of Art. And Cincinnati does a lot of children's plays, is that right?
They do. They have a fantastic education program, and they tour for 2 to 3 months each year, actually 3 times a year. They will tour a play aimed at a particular age group. So when I won the Macy's Prize, it was for a play I wrote for middle schoolers about a boy who wakes up on his 13th birthday to discover he's been turned into a cockroach. And yes, it's stolen from Kafka, but it's about your life changing inexorably in ways you can't change back. So it's about becoming an adolescent, becoming a teenager. It's also a little bit about disability, living with who you really are and accepting that and being that. And so that was just a hoot to write. And
wow.
Joan the Girl of Arc was a commission that they gave me, and that was aimed for teenagers because, of course, Joan of Arc was 17. Actually, she was 14 when she started hearing her voices and 17 when she went to war. And she was a fascinating kid, and she was a kid. And so I really wanted to take a look at her as a real teenager who hears voices and then has to follow what she believes.
Yeah, that's so. The intensity of those topics is breathtaking, and I think what really sets you apart. But you also do some lighter things, including Makeover, which is a theatrical musical based on the life of Estee Lauder and Mary Kay. Tell us about that one.
That's I just got home from a developmental workshop of that musical. It's written with composer Kim D. Sherman, who actually just finished working on the importance of being earnest at the Shakespeare in Washington. She did the music for that. And she and I had been working on this for a few years. And what we did was I got very interested in women entrepreneurs, believe it or not. And what it took for a woman early on to be an entrepreneur, who she had to be, and identity, the identity of being a female in a man's world, in a world of business, in a world where women didn't even travel much after World War II. You know, this women still weren't traveling alone. So much, anyway. We started researching, and we discovered Estee Lauder's life, which was fantastic and interesting, and she was great. And at the same time, we were looking at Mary Kay, and I didn't want to do a biopic, so to speak, play. I wanted to really talk about the larger idea of, you know, who are we as women, especially when we're in business, and how do you reinvent yourself? So that's what the play is really about. And then we took a character who transformed herself into a French woman to start a company, a cosmetics company, and to take it to the rest of the world. And on the way, giving jobs to women.
And that's the good side of the story. What did you discover about those women that wasn't as appealing?
You know, I didn't discover much that wasn't appealing, frankly. I fell in love with both of them. I loved Mary Kay's business model, the door-to-door business model, which was she derived it from having gone door-to-door for years for in direct sales for a company called Stanley Home Products. Some people may remember the Fuller Brush Man, and it was a similar sort of company, and she went door-to-door. And then she realized that she could do this with something she actually really liked, a product she really liked that was all her own. And so she developed face cream and started going door-to-door, showing women how to use it. And that evolved into makeup. Estee Lauder had an uncle who had a face cream. He was Russian. And he had some of the old Russian recipes, which are really great. And he had developed this face cream, and she went to work trying to sell it at the age of 19. And just managed to create a personality for herself that was winning. And she went out and sold this cream, and another empire was launched. But she had a much more dramatic and kind of a sexy life. And I kind of wanted to use her life and Mary Kay's business model.
And that kind of brings me to the question of what makes someone truly amazing, a woman especially. We define it as making strides and changing lives in our series. How do you define it? What draws you to a character like that?
Well, I think what was interesting about these two women was, in a way, how faithful they were to their own feelings and beliefs, while at the same time having to create personalities that would get the job done out in the real world, that would influence people. So I think I remember somebody in Hollywood once saying to me that I had better dress really well and look really prosperous, because if I went in to pitch an idea to a producer, they didn't want to see some kid, you know, with their hem ragged. They wanted to see somebody who looked successful already. And I remember thinking, but I'm not successful. I'm here to get a job. And but the lesson was, you have to look successful to get successful. And that's always sort of stuck in my mind as a bizarre paradox that I needed to examine. And both Mary Kay and Estee Lauder had to sort of change who they were in order to get the trust of people with money who would invest in them and allow them to get further their ideas. So both of them, I think they were very true to themselves, while at the same time going out into a world that wasn't really welcoming to them and figuring out a way to traverse it.
Lessons learned, I mean, the valuable lessons for all of us, to stay true to yourself and also be able to put on the facade to a certain extent. That's quite the balancing act.
Well, I think so. And I, you know, when Mary Kay started out, she had a couple of kids. She didn't want to be at work when they were home. And so a huge part of her company was about finding other women who needed to work, who also wanted to be home when their kids were. And so the business model actually grew out of that idea that you set your own hours. And how do you run a company like that? And she figured that out. That was being very true to herself and what she valued in life, which was, you know, time with her kids, being a mother. But at the same time, she was a sharp businesswoman.
Totally.
That was no joke.
Yeah, no joke at all. And you do the same. You balance your career with motherhood, right?
Sometimes it's imbalanced, but yes.
How old are your kids?
Well, now they are, all three of them are in college at the same time.
Wow.
I have a junior in college and two freshmen in college.
Are they the same age?
They're actually, we have our middle child is one that we adopted. Mm-hmm. So they are the same age, but they're not twins.
Right. Excellent. Wow, that's amazing. Well, let's go back to the start of your career. You've said in other interviews that you initially thought of being a poet. What made you decide to become a playwright?
I was in the writer's workshop at the University of Iowa. I loved writing poetry. I had fantastic teachers. They certainly taught me the value of a single word and how much meaning can turn on one word and how joyous it was to search for that word. I also couldn't see myself necessarily doing just that for the rest of my life. It felt isolated to me. And I just thought, well, I'll take a playwriting class and see what that's like. And I took a class from another playwright who was in school there named Lee Blessing, whose work's been done all over and on Broadway. And I realized that the poetry training was excellent for just blowing up a poem and creating a play out of it. So, and you got to work with other people. You weren't alone in a garret all day. So I just really got hooked on that. I'd always loved theater. And my language, my new language skills earned in college and my love for theater just combined. And that's why I went in that direction.
Excellent. So how then what happened? What was your first job and what did you do next?
Well, I wrote The House Across the Street when I was in college, and that play won the American College Theater Festival Award, and we were invited to the Kennedy Center to perform it. And from there, I sent the play to New York to Ensemble Studio Theater, and they picked up on it, and they called one day and they said, we'd like to produce your play. So I graduated from Iowa and I moved to New York. And the following January, my play opened in New York.
That must have been incredibly exciting.
It was wonderful. And it was a big sort of, okay, you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Be a playwright now.
So what was your big hairy dream back then? Did you think that your career would just continue to take off? Did you have any hesitations or concerns?
I just wanted to work. And that's always been more important than anything. I think when you're really young, you dream of being famous. And you don't know how much work that takes. And then if you're lucky, you fall in love with the work. And that's what certainly I did by being fortunate enough to get into grad school and learning that really the hard way, just, you know, doing it and learning how much it took. And kind of that's been my path in life, was a lot of hard work and constant. And, it continues. I won't ever stop. I don't want to, but it hasn't either.
Excellent. Do you have a favorite play, or is that kind of like picking a favorite child?
Of my own or someone else's?
Well, your own.
Oh, my own. Oh, probably the one I'm working on now. I think it's a toss-up between Our Suburb and Makeover at the moment. Our Suburb is the most autobiographical play that I've ever written. They're all autobiographical in the sense that I'm every character that I write, but this one comes closest to home because it really is about my neighborhood. And Makeover has just been a labor of love about women that I love and want to celebrate. And that's taken a lot of hard soul searching to find, you know, what was real about their struggles. And who were they really? And how do I depict them? There are so many stereotypes about strong women that are negative. And, you know, and I didn't want to get into, and I wanted to make it friendly to, you know, the husbands in the room as well. So I wanted to speak a human language to talk about the struggle of a female entrepreneur in a men's era.
Yeah, fascinating. And these women are so strong and iconic that the lessons, you know, they seem bigger than life. Is that something that draws you to a topic for the plays you write, or what specifically does draw you to a topic?
Well, certainly anyone that I've written about, whether I made them up or not, has been someone with a big struggle. In O Pioneers, which Kim Sherman and I wrote together, we did the stage adaptation that has been in a ton of theaters. That main character in Willa Cather's book, as Cather herself says in the book, faces a vast land with nothing in it. And instead of being afraid of it, sees a future in it. And I think that that would define all the people I'm interested in writing about, is even Crazy Horse. Honor Song for Crazy Horse is about his life. He was fantastic. He had an amazing life. And he was a great strategist. He was a war strategist. They actually used some of his strategy during Vietnam. He stressed not being captured. And he was very human. He made a ton of mistakes. He played a lot of jokes on people. He fell in love with the wrong woman. it was very Shakespearean, his life. But his goal was always to stay free. And you could associate that with my two characters in our suburb who were Holocaust survivors. And what they understand about freedom is completely different than maybe the family across the street from them who's also in the play. So there are themes that are always they're throughout everything.
They're popping up, huh?
Yeah.
So you've also done a ton of stuff for TV and as a screenwriter and for films. Tell us about the difference between writing something for Broadway or a show versus the film venue.
Film and television are actually really different as well. And playwriting is closer to television because usually you have one or just a few sets in a television piece. And you can have a lot of dialogue in a television piece. In film, the language really changes. The language is visual. And you have to give up your poetry in words, and you have to make the poetry image to image. So it's a huge change. The television work I've done has been pretty much just entertainment, a lot of holiday movies and a couple of serious ones, but Women in Jeopardy stuff and holiday movies. And what I liked about the holiday movies was that, you know, I didn't have to kill anybody. Write romantic comedy, which is a riot.
What's your favorite one that you've done?
Yeah,
Which of those stands out?
It was just fun, basically.
Which of those titles stands out?
I would pretend I was in the gulag and that I had to put everything into code to get my message.
Oh, that's funny.
So, a lot of those Christmas movies have little tiny messages about, oh, my ideas of liberation and feminism and whatever else.
Can you name a few of them that we've seen?
Oh boy. What is my favorite one? They change the titles all the time. Time Daily. Undercover Christmas. That's what it's called. And it's about a gal who has to go home with her FBI. She's being taken into witness protection by the FBI, but he wants to go home for Christmas, so she has to go home with him. And you know, she's a stripper, and he's a very straight laced guy from a nice Connecticut family. And Jamie Gertz was in it. It was my favorite.
Excellent. That is so much fun. If you could do it all over again, would you still follow the same path or would you have done something different?
I think I might be smarter about business.
How so?
Well, I think that it has been very hard for me to, in my own mind, be taken seriously. That may not be the truth, but it was in my mind. And so I think I might have been braver. If I had something to do over again, I would ask myself to be a little braver about seeking new opportunities. There was nothing stopping me except me.
So what's the one thing that you really still want to do out there?
Oh, I would love to see my musical on Broadway.
Mm.
You know, I'm doing everything now to try and make that happen.
Very cool. So what is your best advice? We always offer some tips for our entrepreneurs. What's your best advice in a couple of areas? One, if people want to get into the field that you are, playwright, screenwright, get their work published, and also as a businesswoman in this field.
I would say that they're almost very interconnected. The theater world is it's people oriented. It's about relationships, and that's almost a direct quote from Mary Kay. Work is about relationships. No matter how much technological stuff we now have with which to do our work, it's still about people. And you have to be on top of your game in dealing with other human beings, and you have to remember that everyone is human. They all have their tragedies, they all have their flaws, and they have their strengths. And it's really important to keep all that in mind, that we're sort of all in this together. And that said, when I meet an aspiring playwright, I just usually say, find a place you really want to live and become a local playwright. And I think things are changing now, and the economy is dictating that theaters look to the people in their own towns for the acting pool as well as the writing pool if they want to do new plays. And I think it's kind of a more of a grassroots thing that will produce some great work. If theaters take a chance on their own people and the people stay in a place they really love to live in and dedicate themselves to the theaters there.
So it's less which cities are most likely to do that as opposed to just having that passion and building it up from within the community.
That's what I
think. Are there, Are there some cities that are more open to that right now?
Well, certainly Washington, D.C. is opening up to it. Of course, Theater J has been doing new plays for a long time, and new plays by women in particular. but there's much more openness, and I think local playwrights are beginning to get a foothold there. Other cities where I'm just beginning to see this happen, Boston. Chicago has been pretty good to its local playwrights. Seattle's just starting kind of to look inward. San Francisco is starting to look at its own. So I'm just hoping that that continues, and it kind of takes the local playwrights to push it, but it also takes an openness on the part of some of these larger regional theaters who need to sort of realize how much money they could save by using the good local talent they have.
Do you think that it's increasing, that people are going to plays more or less in current times?
I am not really sure what's going on in that regard. I know that New York, of course, is as active as ever theatrically. It seemed very exciting in Washington. It seems exciting in Chicago. I see, when I go to the theater in those places, I see lots of people there. I certainly hope that what I think of as the renaissance that's happening in playwriting, where I've just seen so many good new plays, especially by women, who are finally beginning to get produced as more than an anomaly. It's a very exciting time in terms of the writing that's being done. So I'm thrilled to have been sort of at the, early in on that. But and hence maybe we're creating our own audience. I think theater prices are tricky, and it's hard. It's hard for a lot of people to afford to go to the theater.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if you want to go, and then you sort of fall out of the rhythm of going, because I don't think people want to spend the money on a movie anymore, much less the theater ticket.
It's not, yeah. It's more universal than just theater.
Yes, absolutely. But you're doing such great work, and there, as you said, there is such great work out there. We thank you so much for your time, Dara. You are a tribute to truly amazing women everywhere, not just in the work that you do, but in who you are. And it's a pleasure to have met you.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it.
So tell our listeners how they can follow you. I know you're at Twitter at Cloudy7160, so be sure to follow Dara at Twitter. Where else can people find you?
Oh, dear. Well, I have a website, which is dara.cloud@wix.com. And I'm around. Hopefully I'll be around.
Absolutely. Well, Google Dara Cloud. Be sure to follow her and be sure to check out some of her work. She is just amazing. That's it for today for Truly Amazing Women Radio Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. We look forward to talking to you soon. Have a great day. All right. That's it for today's episode of the Truly Amazing Women Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. If you're a truly amazing woman or know someone who is, don't hesitate to contact us. Simply log on to www.trulyamazingwomen.com and fill out the proposal form. We've profiled more than 250 women on the site who fit the bill of being truly amazing, and we look forward to honoring more. Who will be our next truly amazing woman? Tune in next week for a new episode on www.incandescentradio.com. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.